Recording in progress.
So this is the first of two evening sessions we have tonight, because we have the special late night session to see in the new year. And I started today with an exploration of equanimity, upekkha, and I think that's still staying with me, this something so closely related to this title, this theme, at the still point of the turning world. All the stuff that's happening around us in the world is always turning. And can we have that equanimity in the midst of that? Which doesn't mean always being still or quiet, but it means becoming that bigger container, becoming that lake that we can contain more and respond more creatively, less reactively maybe. And to get to that real still point within, that's when we actually work with those three root poisons of the ignorance and delusion, our views and conditioning, and particularly our attachment, our ego attachment, seeing ourselves as fixed, separate and everything, wanting to be in charge. Which then, I think, out of that arises all the craving, the attachment, clinging, greed, however you want to call that, and also the aversion, the ill will, the hatred, pushing away. So the inner stillness comes from the time when we can let go or lessen that, so we're not so pushed and pulled. And it's interesting, because when the Buddha's talking about it, he sometimes talks of equanimity, you know, as, I suppose, that state of awakening when you reach that, that is that enlightenment, that is that pure place. But he also talks about it along the way. So there's a whole description of when you're meditating and you've got into sort of concentrated states, and at least temporarily let go of, you know, the pull, that push and pull, because we do have moments when we're not, you know, and the dhyanas are times when we're not, you know, we're not struggling with the hindrance. We have, at least for a moment, let go of all of that. So he talks about when you're in the fourth dhyana and there remains only equanimity, and how you can then direct that equanimity to get to particular dimensions or states of consciousness. And then it's quite interesting that he also says that the meditator then discerns that if they were to direct their equanimity to reach those states, that would be kind of fabrication and trying to create something. So there's a whole thing about, yes, we want to try and create the conditions for equanimity and other positive qualities to arise. We want to be able to cultivate them, make them more and more part of our being. And when we do that, well, the energy and that quality can be directed, put to use to help us in our spiritual development and other things. And then there comes a point where you actually also realise that doing that keeps you remaining in the clinging and the fabricating and the trying to make things happen. Anyway, I'm going to read you a little bit of it because I like this sutta. But I'm not going to read it all because it's very repetitive, but you get the idea. On attaining the fourth level of dhyana, there remains only equanimity, pure and bright, pliant, malleable and luminous. Just as if a skilled goldsmith or goldsmith's apprentice were to prepare a furnace, heat up a crucible, and taking gold with a pair of tongs, place it in the crucible, It would blow on it periodically, sprinkle water on it periodically, examine it periodically, so that the gold would come refined, well refined, thoroughly refined, flawless, free from dross, pliant, malleable, and luminous. Then, whatever sort of ornament he had in mind, whether a belt, an earring, a necklace, or a gold chain, it would serve his purpose. In the same way, there remains only equanimity. Yeah, da, 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 da. The meditator discerns that if I were to direct equanimity, as pure and bright as this, towards the dimension of infinite, the infinitude of space, I would develop the mind along those lines. And thus, this equanimity of mine, thus supported, thus sustained, would last a long time. The meditator discerns that if I were to direct equanimity as pure, as bright as this, towards the dimension of the infinitude of consciousness, I would develop the mind along those lines. And thus, this equanimity of mine, thus supported, thus sustained, would last for a long time. The meditator discerns that if I were to direct equanimity as pure and bright as this towards the dimension of the infinitude of nothingness, or nothingness, I would develop the mind along those lines. And thus, this equanimity of mine, thus supported, thus sustained, would last a long time. The meditator discerns that if I were to direct equanimity as pure, as bright as this, toward the dimension of the infinitude of neither perception nor non-perception, I would develop the mind along those lines. And thus, this equanimity of mine, thus supported, thus sustained, would last for a long time. He discerns that if I were to direct equanimity as pure, as bright as this, toward the dimension of the infinitude of space, and to develop the mind along those lines, that would be fabricated. If I were to direct equanimity as pure and bright as this, towards the dimension of the infinitude of consciousness, that would be fabricated. If I were to direct equanimity as pure and bright as this, toward the dimension of consciousness, and to develop the mind along those lines, that would be fabricated. He discerns that if I were to direct equanimity as bright and pure as this, toward the dimension of nothingness, and to develop the mind along those lines, that would be fabricated. And the meditator discerns that if I were to direct equanimity as pure and bright as this toward the dimension of neither perception nor non-perception, and to develop the mind along those lines, that would be fabricated. One neither fabricates nor wills for the sake of becoming or unbecoming. This being the case, the meditator is not sustained by anything in the world, does not cling to anything in the world. Unsustained, without clinging, the meditator is not agitated. Unagitated, they are totally unbound right within, and discern that birth is ended, the spiritual life fulfilled, the task done. So anyway, I thought I'd share that one with you because I really like it, but it's on the level that we're sort of trying to be a bit like the goldsmith and refine ourselves, become thoroughly refined, free from dross. And then there's a sort of malleability, you can direct the luminous, bright, pure energy or the quality of equanimity. And I thought I would just share another reading, which is basically very similar to the poem and the extract from the poem where we've been talking at the still point and neither toward nor what. And again, it's coming to the heart of it that stillness comes when we stop, I suppose, responding, reacting, clinging, pushing away. For one who clings, motion exists. But for one who clings not, there is no motion. Where no motion is, there is stillness. Where stillness is, there is no craving. Where no craving is, there is neither coming nor going. Where no coming nor going is, there is neither arising nor passing away. Where neither arising nor passing away is, there is neither this world nor a world beyond, nor a state between. This verily is the end of suffering. So, we're going to be doing practice and chanting mainly for the rest of this session, but just bearing in mind that we are coming to the end of the year and there may be things we want to let go of. There may be things about how we've been, our patterns, our behaviours, we're not too proud of. I know for me, when we did that exercise this morning, one of the things I had in my little song I had, you know, shame is only emptiness. And I had guilt is only emptiness. I had fear is only emptiness. As well as lots of more sort of mundane things and... But I think it goes quite deep, doesn't it? And sometimes it's good to, in some kind of ritual way, some kind of conscious way, just acknowledge that, have that intention, maybe not to do it again or to try to do it differently in the future, and then just let it go. Yeah. Guilt isn't helpful. Shame isn't helpful. And they are both aspects of emptiness. So we're just going to have a little bit of sitting or reflecting. And if you want to during that time, you could maybe just think if there's any things that you would like to just acknowledge and let go of. And you can do that in your mind, or if you want to write that down, you could. And in your own way, either this evening or tomorrow, maybe you can ritually destroy anything that you've physically written down, or maybe make an offering of it to a shrine or something. Just have it witnessed by the universe and the world. And to just bring in that sort of compassion, we're going to chant Green Tara's mantra a little bit, and then when that fades away, we'll just have some time to sit quietly, either reflecting or meditating, whatever you choose. Sorry, apologies, I've got a bit of a cough.
Om tare tu tare tu re swaha.
Om tare tu tare tu re swaha.
Om tare tu tare tu re swaha.
Om tare tu tare tu re swaha. Om tare tu tare tu re swaha.
Om tare tu tare tu re swaha.
Om tare tu tare tu re swaha. Tare tu re swaha.
Om tare tu 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 tare tu re swaha. Tare tu re swaha.
Om tare tu 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 tare tu re swaha. Tu tare tu re swaha.
Om tare tu tare tu re swaha.
Om tare tu tare tu re swaha. Tu re swaha.
Om tare tu tare tu re swaha.
Om tare tu tare tu re swaha.
Om tare tu tare tu re swaha.
tare ture swaha.
Om tare tu tare ture swaha.
Om tare tu tare ture swaha. Om tare tu tare ture swaha.
Om tare tu tare ture swaha.
Om tare tu tare ture swaha.
Om tare tu tare ture swaha.
Om tare tu tare ture swaha.
Om tare tu tare ture swaha.
Om tare tu tare ture swaha.
Om tare tu tare ture swaha.
Om tare tu tare ture swaha.
Om tare tu tare ture swaha.
Om tare tu tare ture swaha.
Om tare tu tare ture swaha.
Om tare tu tare ture swaha.
Om tare tu tare ture swaha.
Om tare tu tare ture swaha.
Om tare tu tare ture swaha.
Om tare tu tare ture swaha.
Om tare tu tare ture swaha.
Om tare tu tare ture swaha.
Om tare tu tare ture swaha.
Om tare tu tare ture swaha.
Om tare tu tare ture swaha.
Om tare tu tare ture swaha.
Om tare tu tare ture swaha.
Om tare tu tare ture swaha.
Om tare tu tare ture swaha.
Om tare tu tare ture swaha.
Om tare tu tare ture swaha.
Okay. So a little like last night, the evening prayer Anita led. It was one evening, but it had sort of like two parts, moving from one archetypal figure to another. We're going to be moving to White Tara from Green Tara. And more of the qualities of stillness, giving, and wisdom. But what I suggest is that we have 5 minutes in between to move about, shake about, let it all out, do whatever we want to do, and then we'll come back to a place of stillness from that. So, in whatever way works for you.
Recording in progress.
So now we're going to enter more the realm of White Tara. But of course, Green Tara and White Tara are both Tara. They're not separate. It's just that we maybe focus, emphasize on, respond to different qualities of her in Green Tara and in White Tara and all the other Taras there are. So the fact that Green Tara is so much associated with compassion, you know, that compassion is rooted in wisdom, rooted in insight. And White Tara, way being an archetype of wisdom, quintessence of wisdom, but that's a wisdom, again, that's rooted in compassion. So, I thought I'd read a couple of short readings again around this theme of equanimity. Maybe inner equanimity around the mind and the heart. So Bhikkhu Bodhi says that equanimity is an evenness of mind, unshakable freedom of mind, a state of inner equipoise that cannot be upset by gain and loss, honor and dishonor, praise and blame, pleasure and pain. So some of you may recognize the worldly winds there. Upekkha, or equanimity, is freedom from all points of self-reference. It is indifference only to the demands of the ego self, with its craving for pleasure and position, not to the well-being of one's fellow human beings. So what he's emphasizing is that actually equanimity, it doesn't mean you don't care. It's actually rooted in metta. It's the flowering of metta. And you would still have that sense of connection and care for the well-being of others, other living beings, not just human beings. But there's something about not being quite so concerned with the demands of the ego self, or balancing that out with a wider perspective. So I think that's quite interesting, looking at equanimity as freedom from all points of self-reference, Because we do tend to bring everything back to me, don't we? It was very soft. Well, I shouldn't generalize. I do that. Because, of course, I'm the center of the world and the universe, so it makes sense that everything could come back to me. But sometimes I can see beyond that, or sometimes I'm not even thinking like that, I just am beyond that. And I think that points to this other aspect that actually the equanimity, the stillness, all these experiences, they're not something. We've been talking about creating conditions to help them arise, but they're not something outside of us, they're not something alien. And sometimes it's more that sense of creating the conditions so that they can come from within, you know, uncovering that the obscurations. The mind coverings and all those ways that it's translated sometimes, this idea of what's getting in the way of what is our innate nature, our Buddha nature. We have all these spiritual qualities within us, and that our mind, unobscured, is clear and spacious like a pure blue sky. We just have to get to that place when it's not so hidden by all the clouds and clutter and everything else. That it's always there, it's always accessible, even if we're not always in touch with it. And there's always the potential for that sky to come out again, or to be there for us to come in contact with it. So the other reading is from Rinzai Thupten. The habitual thought patterns that hide the mind's basic nature can be compared to clouds covering the sky. Both positive and negative thoughts and feelings are like clouds. The basic nature of mind is beyond all judgments of good and bad, happy and sad. All such judgments are themselves clouds. They come and go without affecting the sky, which is never spoiled or tainted by them. So, White Tara is all about the wisdom. And we have been exploring wisdom a lot on this retreat. Some of it through things like the Heart Sutra, trying to think about going beyond dualities, some in terms of seeing or experiencing things as they really are, aligning ourselves with reality, some of that reflection on suffering, unsatisfactoriness. On impermanence, on insubstantiality, the three Lakshanas. Those are all aspects of wisdom that have been threaded through the retreat so far. So, what we're going to do is we're going to chant the White Tara mantra. And sometimes we can connect to qualities and all these things, or at least our aspirations, our inspiration through a mantra. And just letting go of the ego, because when you're chanting a mantra, it's not really something that you analyzing or conceptualizing, or you know, we're just chanting, we're just repeating the same phrase again and again. And if it's not in a language that's familiar to us, it may not make much sense, but we just keep on chanting. But also having that awareness that the mantra in itself is a symbol for enlightenment, and the qualities of the Buddha and Bodhisattva, if it's their name, is a way of contacting them, connecting with them and their qualities and our potential to be like them and to own those qualities within ourselves. Yeah. So when we chant the White Mantra, the White Tara mantra, in a way we're wanting not just to connect with her, enter her realm, maybe call on her for protection, for support. But we're also calling on the White Tara within, acknowledging the White Tara within, and our intention, desire to develop more of those qualities. more of that awareness that she has in her seven eyes. You know? And awareness itself is transformative. Sometimes all we need to do is bring awareness to whatever it is. And over time, or maybe even quickly, things might change or shift, might transform. But without awareness, we're still stuck in all those core patterns, conditionings, and the delusion, the ignorance that underlies a lot of unskillful behavior. And in terms of trying to access that stillness within, yes, there's the trying to get beyond the craving, trying to get beyond the reacting to our experiences in the world. And my brain has completely, I just forgot what I was going to say. There's something about the inner stillness that's very much associated with ethics on our actions. So just as when we meditate, that will have an effect on our lives and our actions. All the things that we have done up to this point, and particularly the things we've done recently, actions of body, speech and mind, will also be affecting the state of mind, our heart and our body when we sit down to meditate. So if there are things that we feel guilty, ashamed of, regret, that is likely to cause restlessness in the body, restlessness in the mind. So maybe if earlier on in that period of reflection, you had identified some things that you would like to just acknowledge, confess, let go of, you could do that in your mind to White Tara. And then maybe after the sound of the mountains faded away, just sitting still. Can we be still like White Tara when she sits in her meditation posture? So getting in your meditation posture, and we're going to chant the White Tara mantra. And then as that fades away, again, we're going to have a period of just sitting. So one of the things that's affecting my stillness in my mind just now is realizing I'm not sure whether it's Aya or IU in the mantra. So let's hedge our bets. Yesterday we did it with Aya, today we can do it with IU. And I'm sure that Tara won't mind. Praninita. You what? I will go. Om tare, tu tare ture, mama ayu panyanyana pushtin kuru swaha. Om tare, tu tare ture, mama ayu panyanyana pushtin kuru swaha. Om tare, tu tare ture, mama ayu punyanyana pushtin kuru swaha. Om tare, tu tare ture, mama ayu punyanyana pushtin kuru swaha. Om tare, tu tare ture, mama ayu punyanyana pushtin kuru swaha. Om tare, tu tare ture, mama ayu punyanyana pushtin kuru swaha. Om tare, tu tare ture, mama ayu punyanyana pushtin kuru swaha. Om tare, tu tare ture, mama ayu punyanyana pushtin kuru swaha. Om tare, tu tare ture, mama ayu punyanyana pushtin kuru swaha. Om tare, tu tare ture, mama ayu punyanyana pushtin kuru swaha. Om tare, tu tare ture, mama ayu punyanyana pushtin kuru swaha. Om tare. For one who clings, motion exists. But for one who clings not, there is no motion. Where no motion is, there is stillness. Where stillness is, there is no craving. Where no craving is, there is neither coming nor going. Where no coming nor going is, there is neither arising nor passing away. Where neither arising nor passing away is, there is neither this world nor a world beyond, nor a state between. This verily is the end of suffering. So that brings to end this session. Again, just that invitation to take care of the transition. And if you have access to a little bit more stillness, quietness, simplicity or whatever you might have contacted in this session, just seeing if you can stay with it as you move on to whatever activity you may be doing now. And then 10 o'clock, our final session of the day. In fact, my final session, because Panganese is leading tomorrow. And it will be a little bit more active. The stillness, the energy you've accumulated can get expressed through puja. We'll be doing a full-blown sevenfold puja at some point during the evening, but also, again, it'll be some bit more explicitly looking back over the new year. And I think there will be an opportunity to maybe have a little bit of groups, and there's the choice, if you don't want to do that, that you can just stay quiet or be in the waiting room for that period. But if you do want to, there will be that option. And yes, we'll ring in the new year with the gong, as opposed to the bell, have a gong. So, we'll have 12 rings of the gong at the new year, and then just a little bit of sitting, and then that'll end this day. It's quite a significant thing, isn't it, coming to the end of a year, particularly a year like this year's been. So it'd be nice if some of you will be there.
Buddhilila,
yeah?
Can I just ask, that last reading, was that from the T.S. Eliot?
No, that's from the Udana, Pali Canon. But it's very similar in feel, isn't it? And sentiment. That was, I think that's one of the things I like about the poem.
Yeah. How do you spell that?
Udana.
Thank you.
But I would say that we do have the retreat website, and the recordings are sort of going up along the way. And ideally, all the texts for the readings would be up there. But that's down to me, and I haven't felt very wordy or like doing anything administratively, like sending an email with them to Pasquale, who's doing the website. So you may wait until the end of the retreat, or I might manage to get some done, get it done tomorrow. We'll see.
Lovely, thank
but they
you.
Will be there eventually, so you don't necessarily need to hunt them out.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, so thanks all for practicing, and go well. Oh, actually, Brimachitta, while I've got you there, are you a Aya? I know you're a white Tara practitioner.